how can you prevent your child or yourself from becoming addicted to a smartphone? People were asking that question before two major Apple investors called on that company earlier this month to help with smartphone addiction. Apple promised more robust parental controls in the future. Google also said it would release a new set of parental controls for its Chrome operating system later this year. And last week, Arianna Huffington announced that she's launching a new Samsung-specific app called Thrive, which is supposed to limit smartphone use by blocking certain apps. There's also Moment, which tracks and reports usage, Onward, which creates anti-addiction programs for users, and then there's Yonder. You get these little bags to lock your phones up at concerts and church and school. Let's hear more from Brian Barrett. He's a parent and news editor at Wired. He's taken a deep look at all of this. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's talk about some of the parental controls that you recommend that are built into smartphones or even just apps or things that parents can do while we wait for the companies to sort this out. Apple, Google, what are they offering and how good are they?
Starting with Apple, when you look at iOS, they do offer some parental controls, but they're mostly binary. It's sort of you can either have this feature on or off. You can have the camera accessible or not. And you can do it by app and by setting. But thinking of it as a toggle maybe isn't the best way to do it. Maybe we need something a little bit more refined. So you can say in certain situations you can do this, in certain situations you can't do that. I think what people are looking at in terms of improving is not just what you're doing when you're actually holding the phone, but ways to keep you from going to the phone in the first place reflexively.
Hmm. Okay, we want to talk about that. But I tried to do some safeguards through the phone company for a teenager I've been shepherding, and it ended up being a disaster because we forgot passwords and then we needed to use the phone at a certain point and get through to them, and we couldn't because it had been shut off. So are they as hard to navigate as I feel they are?
Well, they are. And there are a few other systems that actually do seem to work pretty well that we can talk about too. But part of the problem is that they're all kind of hard to navigate, especially when you're talking about controlling something remotely. So in the home, I think it's a lot easier than when someone's out in the world. But secondly, they're ultimately pretty easy for kids to get around.
Right.
Kids are smart. They'll find their way around these controls and these safeguards.
Let's say it. They're smarter than their parents when it comes to these devices, yeah.
And, they've grown up with these, and so they know how to get around these things. So really, when you talk to people who study this and who spend their lives looking at this problem, they don't point to specific software or hardware solutions, even though those can help. What they say is, look, you need to be able to communicate with your kids and teach them how to use these devices responsibly, even when you're not there, because there will come a time when you won't be.
Oh, so that's first, and it starts very young. But that horse is out of the barn for a lot of people. So it would seem the second step, I think you're saying, is institute some of the blocking mechanisms with them so that they're not feeling like it's being imposed on them. You are doing it with them. So talk about some of these apps that you recommend.
Definitely. So there are a few. I think you can look at it as either a software or a hardware solution. On the software side, you've got programs like NetNanny is a very popular program. And what NetNanny will do is it'll automatically filter out, the obvious pornographic sites, adult content. It'll also, you can set it to where it will blur any curse words that come up on the internet. On the hardware side, you've got devices like Circle with Disney, which is it works with your Wi-Fi, and that gives you control over every device that's on your Wi-Fi network. So you can sort of down to a very specific level say, okay, Tom can't use his iPhone from 8 to 10 because that's when he should be doing his homework. And Melissa can't use her iPad after 7 o'clock because that's bedtime because she's a little younger, whatever it is. So you can really fine-tune your solutions to your family specifically. There are a lot of routers that do this kind of thing. There's a lot of software that does this kind of thing. But that's the basic controls. You can set limits on time and limits on sites. And that's a good place to start.
Well, there are also ways to make it educational. I love the Amazon Fire Kids Edition discussion cards.
Yeah. So instead, sometimes if you want to think of it in terms of outright restricting access to the internet, maybe think about ways to make it more productive. So Amazon has a line of tablets that are kid-focused. And as part of that, they have something called free time, where kids can go and play with apps, watch movies, all in the sort of controlled environment. As part of that, though, Amazon has recently introduced something called discussion cards, where after they experience whatever it is, an app, a game, a show, it'll ask them questions about how they experienced it. What did they think about it? What did they learn from it? And the parents can then see the response to those questions and maybe kick off a dialogue. the ideal scenario is that you are with your kids when they are interacting with this stuff and doing it in real time. But, you know, practically that sometimes doesn't happen. So this is maybe the next best step to at least make it interactive, engaging, and to really get a sense of not just what your kids are doing online, but how they are processing it.
So this sounds great for younger kids, as does Lego Life.
So Lego Life is great. It is a social media network for kids that Lego launched probably about a little over a year ago, maybe. And their approach to it has been really smart, because what they said is, look, we're going to, when they first launched, they were going to limit responses to emoji responses, and they were going to have no negative emoji options. So that's one thing. So you're always going to have a positive experience. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, what's also great about it is that it doesn't exist to keep you in the social network like Facebook does or Instagram or any of these others. It wants you to be out in the world playing with Lego bricks and then sharing what you've done with a community that is supportive inherently. So, you know, spending time and finding that sense of community that also encourages time away from the phone seems like a really nice balance.
Yeah. We mentioned that when the horses left the barn, let's say you have an 18-year-old.
Good luck.
I mean, it's already done. They're on their phones every second. This is how they speak with each other, Snapchat in particular. But talk about Forest.
So Forest, which I recommend for adults too, and it's Forest is an app that you open the app, you plant a digital tree, and it will grow for as long as you stay in the app. And if you leave the app, it will wither and die. And the idea is to sort of gamify putting down your phone. So the longer you can put your phone down and not fiddle with other apps and go to Snapchat or your email, the longer this tree will thrive. And it works to a point. I mean, it's a more fun way to try to get you off of your phone than just sort of locking it in a closet somewhere.
I don't think I could let the tree die.
I know. And in the meantime, you get to go and actually talk to a human being.
Yeah. You know, you have the people who argue, as the Apple investors do, that it's Apple's job. I can imagine that it might be Apple's job or some of the providers' jobs when it comes to content. But it really isn't when it comes to usage. I mean, that's – how are they going to make, you know, smartphones less appealing?
Right. And it's a tricky question. There are some mechanisms Apple could potentially use, and they say that they're looking into it. One thing that I've heard mentioned as a possibility, and I don't know that this is what they would do, but would be controlling the types of notifications that you get. Right now, your phone sort of defaults to you get inundated by notifications from any app that wants to send them to you. And it's that barrage that causes you to, well, I'm going to check Instagram because it's telling me to, and then while I'm there, I might as well check five or six other apps. So if you have a default that instead puts you in sort of a Zen mode where you don't get notifications unless absolutely necessary, that maybe reduces the impulse to pull out your phone in the first place. And that's something Apple can control. But I agree, ultimately, you know, this is hardware. It is a device. It's a gadget. You buy it, and you have to have a certain amount of responsibility here as well.
Well, and to back up what you're saying about this instant response, the 2016 survey from Common Sense Media found half of teens, and that's in 2016, half of teens felt addicted to their devices. 78% checked them at least hourly. That's nothing, for the teens that
I
know.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's that low.
Yeah, it's that low. They also, 72% of teens felt pressured to respond immediately to texts, notifications, social media messaging. It's as if somebody was standing next to them and said, "How are you?" They're not going to wait. So
exactly. And I think, you know, I think that extends to adults, too. Frankly, I think we think of this through the lens of teens. But I think also they've modeled a lot of their behavior over what we're doing. And yeah. I think adults, I'm tied to my phone more than I wish I were. You know, personally, two years ago, I started wearing an analog watch, just a regular old wristwatch. And the reason was I had realized that I was looking at my phone for the time. And every time I did, I would open it up and open a couple of apps while I was there and check
social
media.
Or respond to a couple of texts. Or
you know. Exactly. But just removing that impulse to look at my phone for the time helped me cut down on what I was – on the amount of time I was spending on my phone overall. So I think little things like that, little ways to recognize what brings you into your phone in the first place and seeing if there are ways that you can limit that work for you.
That's Brian Barrett, news editor at Wired. Next birthday gift, an analog watch. I'm not sure. Maybe if I make it a fancy one. Brian, thank you.
Thanks so much.